I pick cheap
Cheap.
and cheap.
Cheap and cheap. I tell you, no one is going to pick those little brown candies that are always at the bottom of your Halloween bag when you get home.
Those
no
aren't
one,
candy.
No one.
Yeah, that's not candy.
It's like rubber cement in a wrapper. Hold on to your butts, ladies and gentlemen. It's Halloween.
Ooh.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 40. Wednesday, October 31st, All Hallows Eve. Recorded live for your listening pleasure. My name is Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardHauntedTreehouse.com. Yes. Peyton, how are you doing this evening?
I'm very, very scared. It's our 40th show and we're getting old.
We're now officially over the hill.
Yes,
yeah, you
yes.
got to buy a car now, a no, big red
yeah.
fast car.
I need, we need, yes. Or we can just go the old fashioned route and get like a K car station wagon with a, you know, the
spoiler,
the board panels on the side, the yes. woodchuck panels.
No, get a wagon.
Man, when we were teenagers, my buddy Rob had a K car wagon, and that was the teen mobile. That's what we all cruised around in because it held the most people. This is the simplest way to get from point A to point B with all of your friends was a station wagon. So we didn't really give a crap about looking cool. Too funny.
Yeah, yeah.
With us again this evening is Mr. John Beck from the Negative Cutters podcast. How are you doing this evening, John?
Hello, hello. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, no problem, man. We had a lot of fun last time, and we figured, well, we'll just bring you back. Okay, well, sort of a lie. We had scheduled you originally to be on tonight, but then we thought we were going to be short, so we brought another hand in last week, and it just all turned out so peachy keen that we thought we'd just continue the trend. I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Well, I'm happy that I actually had power for you this evening.
Oh, yes. Yeah that's yeah, right. Yeah. We can get into that because you're down on the East Coast, I think, are you not? Boston. No.
Yep.
Boston?
I am in Connecticut.
Connecticut. Okay, right. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, if you happen to be new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where we three come to hang out and talk about the fun stuff that we've been into lately. We gravitate towards geeky, sci-fi, and fantasy stuff. We are not myopic, however. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. So to kick things off, how did Sandy go for you in Connecticut, John?
Well, it I don't know if it's ironic or just telling that this hurricane is named after my wife. it's spelled differently, but we completely lucked out. I don't know if anybody. If any listeners are from the East Coast, last October we had a really bad ice storm, snowstorm thing. It hit, when the trees hadn't left all their leaves. About the same week last year, and it killed Connecticut because it took down trees all over the place because it was like just snow and ice sitting on lots of leaves. So the trees weren't prepared for it, and we weren't prepared for basically have like massive statewide outages everywhere. So huge issue. I was actually out of power for, I think, 5 days. Had to camp up, hole up at a friend's house for the week. So we were expecting the absolute worst. We got, we went out and got a bunch of canned goods, prepared this whole weekend, like made like specific, like a menu of meals that are things that didn't need to be heated or refrigerated and all the stuff. And we never lost power. Never once.
Wow.
So we were like the only towns, we completely lucked out. The Connecticut coast has been hit really bad. People have lost, lost their entire homes down towards mostly like, especially on the New York end.
Yeah.
As you get closer to the epicenter of the storm, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, but, there was a
completely like that.
There was a well. I'm glad to hear that everything was okay with you guys. There was a clip that was circulating online of a power plant in New York exploding, and somebody had filmed it with an iPhone or a mobile device from a hotel, which I'm guessing it looked like it was probably in Jersey. And man, like the sky just lit up when this thing went, and I. I feel for any of the people that were dealing with that kind of stuff in New York, as well as, you know, a lot of respect to all of the emergency and care workers that, of course, were probably run off the clock trying to keep up with, you know, power outages and emergencies and fires and all kinds of stuff. So
I think our official death toll for Connecticut, at least, is 3.
Yeah, 32, I think, total for the storm.
Yeah, we had two people who were crushed by trees. Oh, wow. I think a firefighter and like a 9-year-old woman, and then one Darwin Award. Some guy got naked and ran out to swim in the ocean. And
oh, nice!
Never.
Again. Oh, jeez. Yes, the Darwin Award. Well, someone's gonna miss him, I guess. I have a hard time. I
feel for the people who tried to go out and look for him and risk their lives, you know, trying to save him. And I feel for family, I guess. But that was the stupidest thing you could possibly do.
Yeah, Peyton, you might remember this. My dad filled me in on this the other day. There was a ship, a tall ship, that went out and tried to sail around the storm. Do you remember the name of that one that went down?
The Bounty?
Bounty, that was it. Mutiny on the Bounty. So, I mean, the ship had some history and had been restored and was used in a film and all this kind of stuff with Marlon Brando. And the idiot captain decided, oh, we'll just sail around the largest hurricane in 40 years. And they didn't make it. The captain is still missing. I mean, I'm assuming probably dead if they haven't found him yet. One of the crew members or several of the crew members have been found dead. Some people survived. But it's one of those things where, like, well, congratulations, you know, it's like that line from Top Gun, you know, the Defense Department forgets to inform you that your sons are dead because they were stupid. You know, I don't know why you would take a tall ship. Like, it's not a, you know, futuristic vessel. We're talking, you know, wood and sails and masts and, you know, all the kind of things that just do not stand up to storms like this. I mean, why you would take it out into that kind of weather, I don't know. So
yeah, people do a lot of risky, stupid stuff. I mean, we were talking about this earlier with my wife and my friend, and you know, I could almost understand like someone making the choice to do it, that like a surfer or something like that, going out into it and being crazy. But that's what that's what they do. They risk, and you know, they take big risks and they do crazy shit. And you know, sorry, I have to bleep that.
No, but, yeah, it's all right. Let her fly, man. We keep the explicit tag on just because I don't want to go back and edit. So.
You know, I can almost understand this, you know, from somebody who knew the risks and took the risk knowingly, but somebody who was just stupid enough to think that it was a good idea to go out there in this storm and, you know, like you could fight those waves. Those waves were, you know, I was hearing like upwards on like 20 to 30 feet, I believe.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's nuts.
Yeah. It's like there was this hurricane down in Florida a couple of years ago. I don't know if it was Katrina or a different one. But there was a guy who was kite sailing on the beach, power kiting, and it's amazing. Like you can still find a video there now, and he's probably got like a 10-meter kite, and he's up in the air, and he just pulls a Superman and flies past the camera, doing probably about 30 or so in the middle of the air, and then you see him like stop on the side of a building. And I don't know if he died or not, but it was pretty interesting to watch. It's like, okay, evolution at work.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, my weekend was not quite as exciting as a hurricane, but there was a hurricane of nerds here in Halifax, and I say that with a giant heart, because this past weekend was HalCon, the annual sci-fi and fantasy convention here in the city, and this is the third in a row that they've done since a really long break. I didn't realize this until just this year, that HalCon actually happened in the 80s.
It was about 20 years ago.
And there was a huge break, and now they're back. And they've been doing quite well. This was a record-breaking year for attendance. It was also a record-breaking year for funds raised for charity. Nearing 5,000, I think, as a headcount, and just over 7,000, I think, dollars raised for various charities. I should have checked to see what charity it was, but I'm pretty sure a lot of it goes to the IWK or possibly other kind of research. The really cool thing about this weekend was that, of course, I was a guest, and I got to experience a whole lot of new things that I'm not used to. I had a personal assistant, Jane, who was awesome.
Look at you.
Who I had no idea what to do with. It's like, hey, is there anything I can do? No, I don't think, because I'm just so used to having to just do everything myself. It was fantastic.
Do they think you're somebody?
I don't know. I don't know how this works. There was also a green room, which I forgot to use a lot of the time. We would always go into the green room looking for lunch after lunch had already been in the green room and there was nothing left because we would forget. It was quite funny. And when I say we, I was there with my friend Jules Faulkner and Jocelyn, my girlfriend, was sweet enough to help me out at the table and watch the table when I was doing panels and stuff
like
that.
So you had two personal assistants. Nice.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Actually, there was a barista that I know from the city stopped by with coffee, and she didn't know Jocelyn's name. So when she wrote down who had what for coffee, there was Joel written on the top of one coffee cup and Joel's lady friend written on the top of the other. So I thought that was pretty funny. The great thing about the readers and the fans at the con was that all the feedback I got was so genuine. And there was a lot of people that were super excited to pick up my book and meet me. And I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I was so flattered that some people were even buying the book having no idea who I was. That their first experience with StarCrossed was the 3 minutes they spent at my table before they bought the book. And nice. That was just an incredible experience to know that people were responding to the book as a product, to, you know, the art that was in it and everything like that. So that was very, very cool. And I also had a lot of really good feedback from the panels that I was on. I did three. I did one on crowdfunding with Mike Holmes and Mark Oakley. I did one on webcomics with Jules, who I mentioned earlier, and Faith Aaron Hicks. And then I did one on podcasting with Andrew Dorfman, I believe is his last name. We did that on Sunday, Saturday, and Friday, I guess, respectively, backwards. And had lots of people come up to me at the table afterwards to say how much they really enjoyed those panels. So I was really an all-around kind of uplifting weekend with all the work that I've been putting in the last few months. Into all of these things to get ready. It was nice to kind of have it all come and go. It was like Christmas Day, you know, like it's over and gone before you realize it. And you have to kind of reflect on, you know, kind of like the Monday, Tuesday. And it's like, wow, that was kind of like a whirlwind of a con. So it was really cool. And there's lots more stories, but I'm not going to take them all up here. As it works out, they all kind of fall into the various categories of the show. So I'm just going to throw them in as things go. But before we move on, Peyton, how was your week? Anything interesting happen with you?
Well, Halloween, yes,
I saw the picture of Ewan in the Superman costume. That was awesome.
I was going to take him out. He's a firefighter, but we were going to make this like fire engine for him out of cardboard and stuff. But then 2 days ago, his grandmother showed up with a Superman costume. So that was that. So he's going to be Superman. So he put the costume on and ran around repeatedly going, Superman, 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 as he's flying through the kitchen. It was really funny. I got it on video.
Nice.
And so yesterday we went to a play group, and he was just nonstop running. And then today he wore it at daycare, and it was nonstop running. It was really quite funny. Well, going into daycare, they have windows about 4 feet up, so you can see into the classroom, and below that is the wall and stuff. So I put him over my head like I was bench pressing him. And then I crouched below the window, and we ran past the window like he was flying, and the kids inside were howling. It was really funny.
Nice.
And so he had a good day, and so we went over to his mother's and over to his grandmother's. We had some trick-or-treating there, and then he got all hopped up on sugar, and then it just went off the rails. But anyway, that's what Halloween's for, right? And so I didn't get a chance to go to HalCon, unfortunately, but I heard it was a really good time, and you were telling me, Joel, that Strange Adventures launched their Hobo with a Shotgun comic.
They did, and I have a couple copies here at the house.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I haven't got a copy of it yet, but you were saying on the back there was a link to my website, because when they were first working on the comic, I did a papercraft version of the Hobo to go with that. And so I had the finished piece up on my website for the longest time, and now I got the actual template up so people can go to the site and download it and do it for free for fun if they want to. Anyway, so that's nice. All that's new with me, basically. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That's very, very cool.
I never did see Hobo with a Shotgun. So that was like the most ridiculous concept for a movie ever, and I don't think I could bring myself to actually see it. But I think that's the kind of thing that might really work well as a graphic novel.
Yeah, it's not really. I wouldn't show it to your mother-in-law or anything.
Yeah, it's pretty over the top, violent for violence's sake. But I flipped through it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
It's basically a genre film. So
And the cool thing about the comic is that there's several different artists involved, so you get a bunch of little short stories all told from different artists' perspectives stuff like that. So it's pretty neat. Actually, Mike Holmes, who I mentioned earlier in the show, he did one. Which is very cool. So, right on. Well, I guess we can dive right into movies, TV, and video. One thing that we mentioned at the very, very end of last week that I wanted to get out of the way right away this week is, of course, the Iron Man 3 trailer. So we're a little late to the game. It's been on the internet for a few days now, maybe as long as a week. I wanted to know what you guys thought. I'm on board. There's not a whole lot, I guess, to say other than the fact that I thought it looked really cool. And I like Tony Stark. I like what they're doing at Marvel with the movies, and I'm looking forward to the third one. What about you?
Same here. My only comment is that a lot of the blog stuff seem to be wondering what in the world the super large stuffed bunny rabbit is doing in the back of the background in one of the shots. But I'm like, why are you picking out a stuffed bunny rabbit versus everything else is going on?
I didn't notice it either.
Yeah, I think it's 1 minute 15 seconds in when like the building is being blown up and they're being thrown back because of the blast.
And there's a giant rabbit going
in the background.
Flying.
You can see like a 6 foot tall stuffed bunny sitting next to the stairs. What is that about? And I was
it's just an Easter egg.
Yeah, nice. I was Tony Stark and I was, with Pepper Potts and I was to buy her a stuffed animal, I would buy her a Tony Stark worthy stuffed animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually an Iron Man suit in a
Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's the Iron Bunny. Yeah.
You know what? I decided to quickly look it up and it's right there at the base of the stairs. It's about 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
It is ginormous. That's hilarious. There has to be some sort of comment in the movie about that. Like, he must bring it home at some point and make a big show of it. I mean, I can totally see Robert Downey Jr. having some fun with that.
I think Ben Kingsley is going to be a good villain. Like, when he's saying, talking to everyone, he refers to them as children, as he's, much, more superior than everyone.
Who is Ben Kingsley in this?
The Mandalorian. I have a vague recollection of him. He has all these rings and more rings, more power. I think he might be of Asian descent. I think he's a technologist like Stark is, like a futurist. So I think he comes after the technology, maybe manipulates it a bit. I'm not quite sure.
So Ben Kingsley is basically just has no nationality, because he's Gandhi. He's and now he's playing, some Asian man. He's brilliant. I love Ben Kingsley. So I think it's gonna be fun. I personally don't have that much connection to the Iron Man comics myself. I never was huge into Iron Man. So I don't knowing who the villain doesn't do much for me.
That could be a good thing though going into the film, right?
So. Well, probably, but at the same time, the trailer doesn't do as much for me because it's not teasing much. It's teasing some action. A bunch of suits get blown up. We got the what's the name of the Patriot? Is it the Patriot?
The Iron War Patriot, Machine? I think. Or the Iron Patriot? Is that he get a new name?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's another version of the Iron Man armor.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I mean, you've got you've teased a lot of different versions of the Iron Man armor. He's mass producing it, I guess, and then they all blow up. I don't know. There was something. It was cool, but there was something a little missing, and I'm a little worried after Iron Man 2 wasn't incredibly great as a movie as a whole. It was all right.
I've gone back and watched it, and I was disappointed in theaters. And I think having seen it and then knowing what it was, I enjoyed it better the second time around when I watched it. But you're right; it's not nearly as good as the first one.
You've got the Avengers to compare to now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to pale in comparison. So we'll see how well I end up liking the single superhero movies. Like the Thor 2 is coming out at some point, I guess. And what are the other movies that they've already lined up for?
There's
the
Iron Man coming out. There's Guardians of the Galaxy. There's Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America 2, Winter Soldier. Yeah.
Do you think in the Captain America 2 they're going to do more with the original World War II costume?
I'm not quite sure.
I mean, I know that there's a certain amount of canon you got to stick to in the comics and stuff like that, but I really, really like that costume in the first Captain America movie.
I think they're skipping it because I think they did his origin and then sped him up to the, like the story, if it's going to be told, would have to be done sometime during the time of the first movie, because the first movie covers his origin and his, you know, being frozen for years.
Oh, right.
So I think it's going to be modern day.
Yeah, well, there might be modern. There might be some flashbacks as well, though, because
of who
the Winter Soldier is. So,
No spoilers. No spoilers. Yeah. I don't read a lot of comic books. I read a lot of like comic strip collections and stuff like that. But it's funny. Like, I noticed that at HalCon when I would be having conversations with people that would come up to the table and they'd be talking about, you know, like issue 27 of the new run of Green Lantern when he's on this planet and talking to this guy, and I'm looking at them like, that all sounds cool, but I've got no freaking idea what you're talking about, because I mean, I barely have a chance to sit down and read the stuff that I like normally read on a regular basis, let alone, you know, dive into any new comics and issues and stuff like that. So I'm always a little bit behind when it comes to comic book lore.
And that's really daunting. Like, I look at it as like, I love the idea. We've talked about this a little bit last week, but I love the idea of being able to read comic books on my iPad, but it is incredibly daunting, the idea of picking up a comic, like an actual, you know, a serial, like being able to jump into something like that is just scary, because A, the investment it's going to take to buy the things, and B, the volume stuff. Where do you start? How far do you go back? You know, like, So I never, you know, I have a hard time getting back into this. I love graphic novels, though, in terms of like just self-contained stories that I can pick up that I know, like, people have said, this is fantastic, you should read this, and, you know, it's not going to be, you know, getting me sucked into this long, you know, commitment of paying, you know, $3 and, you know, for 5 pages of art.
I just finished listening to the latest episode of Comic Talk, because it was a big one. It was like 2 hours. And Steven Schleicher from Major Spoilers was talking about Batman 13 of the New 52 and how the Joker's back. And he was saying that they just finished some sort of series with a bunch of, like, it's like gang or some sort of bad guys that were all, like, owl-themed.
There's a pretty big twist on that.
Yeah, well, he said it was fantastic. He said it was a really, really good series. And then they're at it again, and the artist and the writer are making the Joker, like, super creepy. And because, yeah, like, no spoilers. I mean, the last time you saw the Joker, I guess he had escaped from Arkham by cutting off his own face. And now he has retrieved it or reestablished his face and his back. And I don't know how many people he had to kill to do it, but... Anyway, it sounds like really just like, you know, dripping and creepy and gross. And they were saying that it's a great jumping on point. Like, you don't have to read any of the other Batmans.
Right.
He said the only thing that might come in handy would be Batman issue 0, I think, because it covers some of the Red Hood gang, but it's not essential. Like, you could easily just pick up Batman 13 and be off to the races with the new Batman and not have to worry about, like, you know, having read XYZ, you know, trilogies or whatever leading up to it. So I might do it. I got a nice gift card for early Christmas present from my mom. So I might go in there to the iTunes and pick up an issue or two. Actually, that reminds me. Can you use your iTunes account to buy stuff on Comixology, or is that all Visa?
I have no idea.
If it's in-app purchases, it's done through iTunes.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, then that answers that.
But I just don't remember whether Comixology does a separate account. But I don't think they can legally do that. If they have in-app purchases, it has to be done through Apple. So.
Yeah, because I think that's how it works, because then Apple gets 30% of everything, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, well, that's good, because the cash in the account is an iTunes card. So I will,
there you go.
I might be taking advantage of that. So that's the Iron Man 3 trailer. And the only other movie-related stuff that I have beyond that is that on Friday night at HalCon, I spent about 45 minutes at a party hanging out and chatting with John Rhys-Davies.
Nice.
Yes, I will be name dropping this episode of the Citadel Cafe. I cannot help it. It is just going to happen. It was fucking amazing. This guy, he's like 68, give or take. He's a little bit shorter than you think he is, but he was probably about 6 foot tall in his day. But he is charismatic and patient and works the room like a consummate pro. Mm-hmm. And when we actually told him that we were just kind of sitting there and admiring him working the room like a pro, he just kind of leaned into our group and said, "For pro, substitute prostitute." Of course, the rest of us are all in stitches, right? And he's just going around, and he's one of those people that when he's talking to you, you really do feel like you're the only person in the room.
Yeah.
In a good way and in a bad way, because it puts you on the spot. He's like, "Oh, so you draw comics. That's wonderful. Tell me a joke." And the whole place goes silent, and I'm there going,
That's not how this works. I'm not a stand-up.
Yeah, I'm not a stand-up comedian. You know what comics are?
Sure, give me a week.
Yeah, and he gets in your space. It's a very unique way to spend time with someone who you would think that, you know, you're supposed to respect their space, and you know, like you nod, you maybe shake a hand if they extend one, but you don't necessarily want to crowd the guy, right? But he shakes your hand, and his other hand goes up on your shoulder, and he stands about 8 inches from you to say hello. Mm. You know, and you're like, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you, sir."
And he's not exactly short. Of course, you're not either, but...
No, I mean, well, no, he's, I think he's about 5'10".
I think he's 6 foot something.
Well, no, I'm 6'1", and I was definitely taller than him. But I mean, like I said, he was probably 6 foot tall when he was 35 or 40, but I mean, now that he's nearing 70, he's a little hunched over and whatnot, but I mean, not in a bad way. He's just, you know, keeping close to the wine, you know, and whatnot. And he was very chatty, and it was one of those situations where, like, you'd go to say, okay, you know, you're kind of feeling like you're monopolizing his time. You want to make sure that he has a chance to speak to everybody in the room. So, you know, you go to shake his hand and say, "It was nice to meet you," and leave, but then he won't let go because he's got a captive audience in the five of us. And we just kind of sat there and talked to him forever. It was fantastic. He was a super, super gentleman. It was really nice to meet him at the con. Because, I mean, I first, of course, realized his work when I saw Indiana Jones as a kid. That was my first exposure to him. And then, of course, everybody knows him as Gimli. And prior to that,
of course, the TV show Sliders.
Sliders, that's right. Gets to make fun of Jerry O'Connell all the time.
Which is not a difficult thing, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Is he still looking good? I mean, is he still pretty fit?
He looks healthy. He is
married
not
to what's his name, Rebecca Romain Stamos or whatever her name is.
What's that?
What's her name? Mystique.
Yeah.
From X-Men. He's married to her.
Really?
Yeah, and they got twins and stuff.
No, you're talking about the wrong Stamos there, dude.
No, Stamos is ex-wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's married to her.
No, I don't think so.
John Rhys Davies?
Sure? No, Connell.
Oh,
Jerry O'Connell. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about him. Sorry.
No, I'm talking about John Rhys Davies. Keep on.
I'm sorry. No, he's not married to her. No, man.
I was like, what? How does that work?
Well done.
No, one of the things that happened actually at the party, Paul and Storm asked him about olives in New Zealand. Because Twitter, they said, "Well, look, we're going to possibly meet him. What should we ask him?" And the Twitter said, "Ask him about olives in New Zealand." And it was funny to watch the party genres Davies kind of wash away for a minute, and you get the real guy sitting there talking to you about farming, about investing in farming, and about how olives grow everywhere in New Zealand, except for the little plot of land that he invested in.
Oh,
that will not grow anything, you know, and how he's working on, you know, irrigating and doing all the different things to get the soil ready. But he's very knowledgeable, and you could tell immediately that farming is a passion of his. He has cattle farms that he later told us, but it was neat to see kind of like the, all right, I'm going to stop the party, Mr. Davies, and I'm going to turn on the normal Mr. Davies and just kind of fill you in and educate you and inform you not to buy, you know, olive groves in New Zealand, but it was
at least not from him.
No, yeah, well, not yeah. So, word of warning, everybody: if you see an olive grove on sale on somewhere's for by you know owned by John Rhys Davies or you know invested in by him, then I would say no, you know, maybe if it's going to be turned into a cow pasture, but I, beyond that, I don't know. Yeah, there's too many stories that he shared to share. It was all just a really kind of surreal experience by the end of it. So it was very, very cool. Peyton, what have you been watching this week?
Another stop motion film. Actually, I watched Pirates, Band of Misfits, the urban film that came out this summer.
Oh, nice. How was that?
I enjoyed it very much. It was a fun little film. Again, you know, urban, beautifully, beautifully animated. You know, great character designs, good characters, fun stuff. And the, you know, everybody talks about how they had, you know, Hugh Grant as the main voice character and all this stuff and how he was playing against type. I've never been a person to see a film based on the voice talent. It's kind of, always seems kind of silly to promote that, but mm-hmm. I guess they do. But the movie, I don't think the movie did as well as they would like, but, you know, those three stop motion films that were out in theaters this year, so hopefully that'll be a good trend, but we'll see what happens. But mm-hmm.
Does Aardman use the same type of replacement stuff now that the people at Coraline were doing, or are they still strictly doing
They do a lot of replacement stuff. A lot of that replacement could be like done with clay, mm-hmm. and a mixture of clay and silicone. So like the main portion of the head could be silicone, like in the movie Chicken Run, right? And then the mouths could be done with clay, and then they would mold that and then do mold and blend the edges and all that stuff in. So it is a little bit time, it uses up a fair bit of time, but it looks great. Cool. The bodies themselves, that would be silicone, and you know, I'm not sure if the hands in this were silicone or clay or not. I haven't really seen many behind the scenes on it, but it was a very fun film. Some stuff in it was CG, you know, like the wide shots of the boats and all that, you know. But
yeah, well, I mean, and if it's treated the same way as stop motion, then I mean, I don't really see the harm in that, especially if it's.
Yeah.
I mean, because I mean, really, you'd probably want to put your money into the character animation and not, you know, some crazy, you know, wide establishing shot that's on screen.
Yeah. How are you going to animate, you know, rough seas and a boat coming through the ocean and all that, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just practical elements, right? But yeah, it was a very good film. With great. There's some great little moments in it, and I'd recommend checking it out.
Hey, fill me in. How traditionally do you animate water in stop motion? Is it like cellophane and stuff?
You could do it with cellophane. Some things maybe on like a mirror with you know, salt and stuff like that. You know.
Salt. Okay. With, yeah.
Some things could be just you know, bubbles. Like for anytime you use foam. Like with Shaun the Sheep or anything like that, it would be glass beads with wax around it. Or you could use like on a Marapoca, we would use ultrasound jelly for some water effects and stuff like that.
Right,
you know, for raindrops, you could use bits of clear cells that you would, you know, cut into the shape and bend and do those as a replacement. Or you could use hot glue gun stuff for, you know, hoses and stuff like that, water coming out of a hose, and a lot of different techniques, you know, just a little couple minutes on Google or, you know, the right forums, you'll find out how to do it. So
yeah, right on. Oh, yeah. Cool. I just thought I'd ask, because I know that's up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
Up your alley. John, what's been on your screen this week?
Well, we loaded up mostly a bunch of TV onto the iPad, and, you know, just in case, and I even bought an app for, you know, like playing like Xvid movies and stuff. I just got a bunch of digital stuff and loaded it on there just in case, and then nothing ever happened. So I think movies wise, the only thing we ended up watching this week was some like stage production of Phantom of the Opera, which is actually really cool. I've always enjoyed really well shot stage productions where you feel like it's really enhances the experience of watching something like that from home and making you feel like you're in the theater, and even somewhat possibly better than the theater, because if they edit it well, then you've got, you know, lots of shots showing you all the different things that are happening
mm-hmm.
at that time, and really focusing in on little bits and getting to see a lot of great things that you normally would have to go and probably, you know, you would have to go see the show multiple times live to really be able to watch anything other than the, you know, the action that's happening immediately. So it was very, very well done. It was like a big anniversary thing. So they had a bunch of, you know, like Andrew Lloyd Webber came out at the end, who always for some reason reminds me of the guy from Monopoly. His head is just very egg-shaped. but he, so they had him come out, and they had a bunch of like the original cast come out and sing, and it was pretty cool. But
have you seen the Phantom of the Opera, the movie that they came out with a couple years ago?
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
Yeah,
it was pretty god awful.
It's the girl in it. I can't remember the name of the actress, but she was quite talented. But it was hard to get behind. Is it not Gerard Depardieu? Who is it? It's a Jared Butler.
Yeah, Gerard. Yeah,
Gerard Butler is the Phantom, and he's all right. I you know the film has its
don't say that with Terpster around.
Oh yeah,
I believe Terpster is like 100% behind anything Gerard Butler does at all.
Oh, I see.
But I will say on that note of like as far as movies, I am actually surprisingly interested in seeing the new Les Misérables movie, because they're doing it all live singing. It's not dubbing at all.
Oh, interesting.
Which is not really done for movie musicals. So they're doing some interesting choices because of it. Things that really didn't make sense when I first saw the trailer. Anne Hathaway is singing, and it's just like she's not really singing it. She's more acting it, but because the reason they made that choice was because they have that ability to be incredibly intimate, and because they're singing it live, you know, they can really get into that moment. You're not, you know, the acting is done live with the singing versus just getting up there and faking it to a set pre-done, you know, because otherwise they have to record the soundtrack like well before they ever start shooting.
Right.
So I'm really intrigued to see how that comes out. And Hugh Jackman, of course, can do anything.
Mm-hmm. He's a really talented singer too.
He's incredible. He's a talented singer, dancer, actor. Like it's ridiculous. So I'm actually looking forward to that, and we'll see how it comes out. But if that does work, I hope to see some, you know, some other things kind of in that vein done real, you know.
Cool. Well, I think we'd be remiss if we left the movies and TV section of the show if we didn't talk about the giant whopping news that happened in the last day or so online, and that is Disney has purchased Lucasfilm for freaking $1 billion. Billion with a B.
And Pixar. Right? Or is that the previous? Is that the past? Did they already purchase Pixar?
They did Pixar in 2009.
Yeah, Disney's already had Pixar. Although it's funny.
Okay, so what I was seeing was the comparison between the prices, because Pixar was $7 billion and Lucasfilm got $4 billion.
Pixar was $7 billion?
Yep.
Really?
Wow.
I didn't know that. What was funny is that Lucasfilm started Pixar, sold it to Apple.
Right.
Apple then either got rid of it or sold it to Disney. And then now Disney is now buying Lucasfilm. Like it's crazy, crazy. And apparently, along with, of course, Star Wars, and the now forthcoming Episode 7 in 2015.
Wait, what?
They officially announced an Episode 7.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're going to be releasing a movie every 2 to 3 years after that.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing Star Wars a la Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I've been battling with this all day long. Like there are people out there that are excited about it, and there's a great comparison. I mean, like you could easily say, look what happened with Marvel and the Avengers once Disney was able to back them. Look what Disney has been able to do and keep alive with the Muppets. I mean, I'm not saying that
because they're putting the right, they're backing the right people though.
Yeah. I mean, the new Muppets are not as good as the original, but I mean, it's also better than nothing. So, right. I mean, I enjoyed the Clone Wars TV show. I know that there's another TV show in the works right now for Star Wars, with Disney.
No, are they talking, so I'm sorry to interrupt, but are they talking live action or are they talking cartoons?
Oh,
live
the movies? Action. Oh, they're live action. The movies are going to be, okay, it's basically, I almost want to say that it's been confirmed that it's a sequel to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, so like, will they show the entire bit where Luke falls to the dark side and comes back and all that?
Well, see, now's the perfect time to do it if they can line up the actors, at least some of the actors, because now you can go, okay, it's 20, 30 years in the future, and you've got the aged actors, you know, and my guess is if they're going to go with the somewhat accepted, hopefully they'll stick to some of the book canon that's out there from the extended universe. But my hope would be that we'll get the, it'll follow the children of Han and Leia. You've got Jaina and Jason and then Anakin is the third one.
See, for me, I would kill to see the Timothy Zahn trilogy.
Oh yes, on screen. Absolutely.
That would be just too epic.
Soon. It's way too soon. They'd have to do like Benjamin Button to their faces.
Well, they'd have to recast. I think they would. Yeah. They wouldn't be able to use the same actors. I don't necessarily want them to use the same actors. I mean, Mark Hamill is a very talented voice actor, but I don't necessarily need him to reprise the role of Luke Skywalker to be happy.
I'd be happy if he reprised the role in a limited way. Like he just appears like two or three times in the movie. You know what I mean? Not a focal point, but he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, as I don't know. I have worries about recasting myself, but.
There was a great shot of on one of the blogs today. They had a picture of the guy who played Chekhov from the new Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're batting his name around as a replacement for Luke because in this particular side by side shot, like they actually looked a lot alike.
Hmm. Anyway, interesting.
And he's a pretty solid actor as well.
Yeah, so. And you'd have to go with someone that's relatively unknown. Like, it'd be hard to bring someone with too much baggage into the Star Wars trilogy.
But at the same time, though, the fact that the trilogy is out of Lucas's hands for directing and for writing could actually be a big boon, at least for the dialogue.
That means at the basis it has the possibility of actually working. Whereas if it wasn't set up that way, it's doomed.
Yeah. Well, he's still on as a creative consultant, although he will not be directing the films. He's still going to be involved.
He didn't direct Empire. That's the best one of the lot, right?
Yeah.
So. Well, all right. If so, bring back Spielberg, right? I mean, was it?
I was watching Tech News Today earlier this afternoon, and they were toying around with different directors. And of course, obviously, the ones that pop out are Nolan.
Which would be a really funny version,
Abrams. You got all these people that are big, and you're like, nope. You've got Avengers 2, I think, is coming out in 2015. So Whedon is busy. Abrams is tied up in Star Trek, and Nolan probably just he wouldn't be the right fit. Although he's a good director, he just wouldn't be the right fit.
I'm your father.
Yeah.
Swear to me.
The one that was probably that was voted the most likely is Spielberg because he's buddies with Lucas. And actually, speaking of Spielberg, along with Star Wars goes the Indiana Jones property Disney as well, right?
Yeah, so, I think the only thing that doesn't revert to Disney would be the comic book rights, which will still be a dark horse for now. So
I think so, yeah. Yeah, the other thing too that tends to be glazed over is, of course, with Lucasfilm comes THX. And all of the, industrial light and magic technology that they've been developing over the last 30, 40 years. So, I mean...
Are those actually owned by Lucasfilm?
Yeah. It's all one great big giant chunk, and it's all owned by George. Was. It is ridiculous. And that $4.something billion price tag...
$4.05 billion.
Half of it is in cash, and the other half is in stock options in Disney.
It's good at spending money.
So George finally sells out, and we're like, dude, you did that long ago. It's about time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you can sort of see his point, too, though, of the idea of passing along to a large corporation where it'll be safe,
Yeah. Well, because, look what Disney's done with Mickey Mouse. I mean, every time the copyright comes up for Mickey Mouse, they just change the law and extend it by 70 years.
Yeah, and now everything's underneath the Disney banner, then.
So you've got... You've got Disney that owns all of their major properties. Then they own Pixar, Marvel, The Muppets, and now Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
And Willow.
Is Willow under there? Is that all under?
Yeah. That was Lucas.
That was Lucasfilm too?
Yeah.
Right on. I mean, so there's a lot that's now happening at Disney. And I mean, I made a joke online saying, well, now... at least some of the mashup costumes that I saw at Halcon,
making sense.
Yeah, the Spider-Man stormtrooper wielding a lightsaber, totally makes sense now.
With Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Mickey Mouse ears. Yeah. Well, that was, I saw a tweet earlier today. It was like, I foresee much Mickey Mouse wearing Star Wars costumes in the future. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Unfortunately, that's probably going to be the reality for a little bit. But I think it's a good thing. I kind of hold my breath as to whether the movie will be good, But I think for Star Wars as a franchise, for something that I grew up loving, having more money than God behind it can only be a good thing when it comes to like television shows like The Clone Wars and the live action television show that has been in production for freaking ever, but I've never heard anything about. That kind of stuff, I think, will end up being worth the wait.
And I think as well, like, you know, you said, we grew up with this stuff, but we're growing up now. It is time to pass it on to the next generation. You know?
Yeah.
You know, we don't own this, and, you know, it's up to this point, it's been an independent property, right? So,
yeah.
You know, George Lucas owned it all the way through. So, you know, as an independent creator, good on him for getting, you know, $4 billion out of his idea.
Absolutely.
Good for you, right? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's selling out. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Joel, if they all right, if they did do the Thrawn trilogy,
mm-hmm.
as it, who would you cast as Thrawn?
As Thrawn?
Yes.
Wow. I'm gonna.
Because I have no idea.
It would have to be. I would say I'm gonna just say it probably would have to be. He would have to be British, just to kind of keep with that whole imperial vibe. You know what? I know exactly who I would cast. I can't remember his name, but he played Magneto in the new X-Men movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Michael Fassbender?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
That's who I would say, because he has that capability of being both regal and evil at the same time.
Mm.
And that's where I would throw my vote. You? Or you have no idea?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It is I think you're on the right track though. It definitely has, he needs to have that. Well, I don't know if he necessarily needs to have that imperialness. I mean, he is imperial, but he's also an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is not, there is something like, I actually really, he's one of my favorite characters because he's such a incredibly great, almost sympathetic, like you really like him, even though he's the bad guy.
Yes.
So there's that, it's a fairly complex character to play, and I'm not sure who exactly I would,
Rick Moranis.
who would you cast in the Han Solo role?
I think it just needs to be, you know,
like a nobody, not a nobody, but a talented somebody that we don't know.
No, I think it's just, I think Harrison Ford can still do it. Done. I'm sorry. Like, I just don't. I don't really. I'd have to really think about it, like if I were to recast him, if they're trying to do it very shortly after. But I don't know. I really like the idea of skipping ahead. Give us a break.
I'm pretty confident Carrie Fisher won't sign up.
Yeah. And that's okay. Like, they can write around that. You know what I mean? Like, if they can get like one or two people to ground it and then a bunch of new people, I think it could work. But mm-hmm. other than that, you're right. You absolutely have to recast like everybody. But this is like huge. Like, I didn't even know this before we started talking about this. So I'm going to have to start making my list.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know about the merger before we started talking?
I didn't know. No, I knew about...
the merger. You didn't know about the episode 7.
Right.
Right.
I didn't know that that was even on the table at all.
Mm. Yep. Coming, quote unquote, soon to a theater near you. Well, if that's all we've got, I guess, for movies and TV, I can jump into the pick that I've got for reading this week, which is not necessarily, I haven't started to read it yet, but I am dying to dig into this book. This is Jim Henson's A Tale of Sand. It's a lost screenplay by Jim Henson and Jerry Juhl, I guess is how you pronounce that, J-U-H-L. As realized by a favorite cartoonist of mine, Ramon Perez. I've been following Ramon's work online for quite some time. He does Kookaburri, Butternut Squash, has recently done some work for X-Men. I actually got to meet him at HalCon. We were supposed to go out for a drink at one point, but he ended up not feeling well and needed some sleep because the con is long days. And when you're a guest, you know, you're expected to do panels and be at your table signing and stuff like that. So, and he, of course, has this Tale of Sand book out. And I could not resist picking up a copy signed and sketched in by Mr. Perez. Fanboy moment achieved. And it is beautiful. I haven't read it. I flipped through it a little bit, and it's obviously a Henson fantasy. Like, there's just all kinds of imagery pops out at you when you flip through this book. One of the most interesting things is the way that it's been colored. A lot of it's kind of like monochrome, but not necessarily gray. It's like, you know, oranges or blues or pinks and purples or turquoises.
Yeah, it's like duotone or something. Yeah, it's very, very It's very pastel looking too.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, Ramon's inks, if you're familiar at all with his work, is just sick. He is a talented son of a gun. So I'm very much looking forward to digging into this. And I had only just seen glimpses online prior to grabbing the book at the con, but Jules Faulkner had said that she owns it back in Toronto, and it's just, don't even think about it, Joel. She says, just go buy it, because you will not regret a second. One of the things that she said about the book was that she finds herself having to reread pages because she stops actually reading the dialogue and just kind of pours over the artwork, and then she has to go, like, crap, I don't know what's actually going on. I have to go back and reread what he said. So it's I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, there's a website I go to sometimes that for like book reviews and stuff. It's called Parka Blogs, parkablogs.com.
Right on.
And what they do is they take art books, other visual books, and they do a YouTube video where they just flip through the pages.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, you got a chapter, you pick it up, and you flick through it, the same idea. Anyway, they have a review of that, of the Book of Sand, the Tale of Sand there, and I see what you mean with the colors and size. Beautiful.
Yeah, really, really pretty book.
I threw the link up there in the chat room for people. So
I will say, like, I looked, I've, like, the couple of pictures, like, if you just Google Tale of Sand, the pictures that come up, like, at first, just, like, glancing at them, especially smaller, like, it's rather confusing, and it's very abstractly laid out. Mm-hmm. Once I read into like the basic intro, like synopsis of like the first, you know, couple pages of it, it sounds really interesting. With like some guy is at a party being thrown for him, and he doesn't know why, and then all of a sudden he's at the edge of town and he's being told he has a 10-minute head start, better start running.
Yeah, like they really kind of throw you into it.
It sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah,
it looks like a Terry Gilliam movie.
Yes.
Yeah, and it reminds me, the layout, like you said, John, reminds me a lot of how Ramon treats Kookaburri, one of his online comic properties that he did. And the camera angles are all over the place, and it's very interesting visual storytelling. And actually, on the cover of the book, it credits, you know, of course, written by Jim Henson and Jim Jewell, and then it says, as realized by Ramon Perez. So it has that kind of special, you know, I don't think there was necessarily any storyboards. It was just a screenplay. So, I mean, he kind of had free reign with it. And I'm glad they let him do it because, I mean, obviously, like I said, he's a very talented individual. So it's something that I've been dying to get into. And now that I got this sore back to deal with, maybe I actually might be forced to take some downtime and check it out. That's it for me for reading. If you guys don't have anything, I can jump into email.
I did want to mention that I have a there's this artist that I know who did some commission work for me. And it was kind of awesome.
Do tell.
And a while ago,
an apologetic long time ago.
It was in Utah, actually. What a strange place to meet some man.
Yeah.
We were at Nerdtacular. I think it was randomly during one of, I think we were about to go on lunch, but I had this idea for, I had this just picture in my head of sort of this tableau that represented kind of the first year of my relationship with my wife, which was very, it was briefly on and then very, very badly off for the rest of the year. And we were like at each other's throats, hating each other and then trying not to hook up with each other again. I talked to Joel and I explained the vision for what I had, and we continued emailing each other, and I just got the commission today. I actually linked it up on all said social networks, but it's absolutely amazing. I'm fantastic, and I got to say, this is the first piece of art that I've ever had commissioned, and I'm really proud and happy that I did it, because we have something that is it's a keepsake. It's something purely unique and original that represents us and our relationship, and it's from a great artist, and I was able to support Joel and get something that nobody has. And I really strongly recommend that if anyone hasn't, like, you know, done anything like that before, give it a shot, because, you know, just even coming up with some idea of something that you'd like to see, but you can't really, can't make it a reality. Letting another artist, sort of take the reins and create that vision for you is something that is well worth doing. And I only wish that I had timed this like around our anniversary, which is like in April, which wouldn't, it's not your fault, Joel, because I came up with the idea well after the anniversary. So, but I brought her in as soon as I got it. I brought my wife into the room and made her close her eyes and showed it to her. And she started to tear up. It was fantastic.
Well, thank you, sir. I really appreciate all the kind words. And it was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun. I liked it's always nice when you have someone that has a vision and, is able to say, this is what I'm looking for. It has to be something like this. And then, like you said, gives a good, kind of a good description and a good feeling of what they're trying to capture. It made for a lot of fun with, obviously it's an audio podcast. People can't, hear it, but, or see it, but it's basically John and his wife at a bar kind of making a toast to one another. But then behind their backs, they each have weapons of various degree of evil. Sandy has daggers and John has a flail. And it was just a very fun kind of sly story to tell in one image. So I appreciate the opportunity to work on it, man. It was a lot of fun.
And I appreciate you doing it. It's fantastic. And I just now I have to find a really good frame for it and get it printed up. But
I forgot to mention that in the email. Actually, I'm gonna be able to get a print done.
Awesome.
That's all part of the commission, and I'll sign the print and then send something your way. I'm just working out the details on that kind of stuff for the mailing and the shipping and stuff like that, because I'm waiting for shipping material for my books to come in, which will ironically also fit lots of other things that I need to send out. So it's all kind of part and parcel with the Indiegogo packages that are going to be going out in the next month or so. I mentioned at HalCon, actually, at one of the panels I was at, people were asking, so what's it like, to be in the webcomic business? And I said, it's a lot like the shipping business for me at the moment, because of 80 pre-orders of books that have to go out quite happily, to send being sent. But it looks like a lot of work piling up on my desk in the next few weeks. But it's going to be a lot of fun too. In the Internet Minute this week, we have the Krang O-Lantern. I'm going to throw this link in our live chat room for everybody. This I found via the Tadpool Facebook group this morning, and some creative guy or girl, I guess, has put a watermelon carved into Krang from the Ninja Turtles into a pumpkin.
Oh my god!
Which is carved just like the body or the abdomen section of the Krang bodysuit from the cartoon, and it was just brilliant. I thought it was
the
coolest thing that I've seen in a long time as far as a pumpkin goes. Like, I've seen lots of creative stuff. I've gone to the animation festival in Ottawa, where there's a pumpkin carving contest, and there's all kinds of, puking pumpkins and all that kind of stuff you see around. I saw a working rigged Tetris pumpkin online the other day, but the Krang-O-Lantern takes the cake. That is my internet pick this week.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Now, what about you, Peyton? Anything?
I got two little picks there. Both Halloween related, actually.
Cool.
One is a baby Marty McFly. Someone took a kid's stroller or a kid's little push cart thing, and they've built a flying DeLorean around it at a cardboard and dressed her baby up in the red vest as Marty McFly, and it is awesome.
Oh, that is
really
wicked.
Really cool. Anyway.
Nice. I like how the DeLorean hides the whole stroller.
Yeah, it's out enough around the edges so you can't see the wheels, and then the wheels of the DeLorean are downturned, so it's like they're hovering in the end of the second one. Anyway, it's pretty sweet.
Very, very, very cool.
And the other thing I picked is Josh Whedon endorsing Mitt Romney.
Ah, you stole mine.
Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't in the notes, I'm sorry.
No, I know. I didn't put it in. Anyway, I know that literally I was thinking, I'm like, what do I have? Oh, that's the only thing I can think of. So, yeah, go.
And it's really worth checking out. He makes a very good point on actually endorsing Mitt. And if you like the results, I think you should vote that way. anyway,
it's like top thing on YouTube. It's hard not to miss it at this point. Most likely everyone's seen it, but really fantastic video.
Yeah, the main gist is basically if you want to help speed up the zombie apocalypse, vote for Mitt Romney, and he makes some very valid points in there. So
yeah, I was actually confused because I don't know enough about Joss Whedon to know where his politics actually lie. And when Jocelyn and I watched this for the first time, I want to say last night, maybe the night before, I wasn't sure where he was going with it until he started to get a little bit more satirical. I was like, okay, I get it now. You got me. Because I was like, wait a minute, what, really? He supports Mitt Romney? That doesn't make any sense at all. But now I know. Now I know.
Yeah, funny stuff.
Alrighty, well, unlike last week where we went forever and ever, this brings us tightly to the end of the episode 40 of the Citadel Cafe. Thanks everybody for coming out. I really appreciate the live chat room. It's always fun to have some folks in there. We record the show every Wednesday night at 7:30 Eastern on starcrossedonline.com/live. Music for the Citadel Cafe is composed by Kevin McLeod, and the podcast is, of course, available on demand via iTunes and our website. The website in question is thecitadelcafe.com. You can also email the show and find us on Twitter. It's just the show name, The Citadel Cafe, at Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, etc. If you have left us an iTunes review and we have not read it on the show and you're outside of the Canadian store, I apologize because there's something going on with either my iTunes account or possibly iTunes in Canada. I can't change stores to check other reviews. So despite a review being the best way for a podcast to reach new listeners, I can't thank you for doing it. So if you do leave a review in a US or a EU UK store, please drop us a line via Twitter or email and let us know that you've done so, so that we can give you a shout out right here on the show. Don't forget to check out our friends at the Gamers Inn podcast. If you're a gamer, check out Jocelyn and Ryan as they share what they're playing, quickfire game industry news, and more. You can visit visit GamersInnPodcast.com for details. I always get that wrong, and she always gets mad at me.
Mm-hmm. That's just life, man.
that's the way the cookie crumbles, huh?
Yeah.
Right on. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, my name is Joel Duggan, and you can find me and my comic at starcrossedonline.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Google+ with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
You can find me and my odd bits of work here and there at cardboardtreehouse.com. That'd be my website. And on the Twitter at Peyton Francis and the Facebook and here at the Citadel Cafe where, you know, being 40 is not so bad apparently. And how about you, sir? Where can people find you there, John?
You can find me on Twitter at Copper Dome, and you can, of course, check out Negative Cutters on YouTube at youtube.com/negativecutters for all your trailer reviewing needs.
Fantastic. I subscribed to your channel last week.
Yes.
So now I will have it handy on my Apple TV.
Nice.
Yes. I'm always dismayed that you can't subscribe on the Apple TV. You have to go do it on the computer first. It's a pain in the ass.
There's always something. There's, you know, it's like everyone, like all this integration with all these different devices, and they always miss like those two things that you just, like, if they just had this.
Yeah. Well, geez, I've had an Apple TV now for 2 years, and only just a couple months ago did Netflix allow you to add stuff to your queue. In Canada.
Yeah, they did that for a while on the Xbox when it originally came out. It was like, okay, this is kind of useless.
Yeah, kind of crazy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
I guess, you know, there's one I completely forgot about during the TV section. I started to watch the first season of American Horror Story.
Oh yeah, I heard that's really good.
We turned it off because I'm like, why am I watching this on, you know, a couple days before Halloween when we expect the power to go out for like days and days and days? And, I mean, that show is messed up. Like, it is just completely messed up and freaking creepy as hell. Like, yeah. I was like, I'm going to turn this off and watch this later with the, you know. I'm like, I do not need like nightmares when, you know, like, and we're expecting the power to go out at any moment at that point. So I was like, forget it.